Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cavs have gone 1-1 since we last recorded with a win over the Charlotte Hornets and a loss to the Golden State Warriors. It's always painful to lose to the Warriors, but it's a little less painful when it's JTA rather than Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, or God forbid, Draymond Green. But with me today to help talk about this final stretch for the Cleveland Cavaliers is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I thought you were going to say it's a little less painful when you're doing it with your friends.
I mean, that's true, too. And fortunately, we do have our friends with us today. We got good buddies of the podcast, Chris Manning and Evan Damrell from Locked On Cavs. Chris, I'll go with you first. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, buddy. It's a pleasure. It's good to get some hangs with you and Carter. I missed you guys.
Man, we missed you too. That's why we had to have you back on. And to peel back the curtain just a little bit, we got a DM not long ago requesting another one of these crossovers, calling it the Cavs Fandom Avengers when we get together. So when now we have possibly the most significant stretch for the Cavs that they've had in years, really significant games coming up. And what better time to have you guys on? And the other half of the Locked On Cavs equation is our buddy Evan Damrell. Evan, how you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good. It's been a while, Justin, since we last spoke. How are you doing?
It has been a while. We podcast, for those that don't know, that haven't already checked it out, go download Locked On Cavs, listen after this. We did a little bit of a recap after the Warriors game, but we're going to do a second recap here because we got multiple games to talk about. We don't go daily like you guys, so let's get right into it. So I mentioned before that the Cavs managed to get a win against the Hornets. Obviously, the Hornets are a little undermanned without LaMelo Ball as well as Gordon Hayward, but it was yet another really strong game from Garland. And even though they lost to the Warriors, I love the direction that this team is trending right now, especially with the way the young players are playing right now. Carter, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, it just felt like the team was whole, you know, and they obviously, I do not think that we're going to, that no matter what the personnel is in terms of who's healthy, that the Cavs are going to stop having, you know, 8-10 minute stretches without scoring. I just think they're a young team that is still figuring it out. I think I saw Ben Cox on Twitter say something along the lines of like, well, now that we've fallen down big, it's time to shoot some floaters. and like that does feel like when this team starts bogging down, they start kind of doubling down on their bad offensive tendencies. But you know what I'll say, I started with negativity to actually segue into some positivity, which is when things are rolling, it's like, oh, this is what they were going for. And you know, we didn't really get a chance to see that at all thus far this season. You know, a few games with Andre and Kevin, you know, at the very, very sparsely in the front of the season. And ever since, we've been missing at least one kind of foundational piece at any given time. So, yeah, there were some bumps, but it just felt right. It felt like this is the team that I'm supposed to be evaluating. And now I can actually feel like I'm doing the work because there's been so many times this season where it's like, well, you know, no matter if they lose, it doesn't much matter because this, you know, they're playing Lamar Stevens for 30 minutes. And There's no disrespect. He has very much earned his long-term contract with the team, which I think has happened since our last pod. Yes. I think that was in between the two pods. But you know, that's just not what they had in mind, and just kind of getting to see this team make some sense due to health is fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a really great sign that the starting lineup that you would anticipate with this team finally got some time together. The Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Love, Allen lineup played about 16 minutes together against the Warriors, plus 15 net rating, outscored the Warriors by 6 in that time. Chris, you've mentioned some really valid complaints, or not complaints, but observations about kind of how the team looks, right? That the whether it be as a result of injuries or inexperience or fighting bad habits, there's been a struggle to figure out exactly what this team's identity was. In our first glimpse of kind of what that lineup is, what were some of your impressions of that lineup?
I think it works. I get the idea of it in a lot of ways, right? Like, I think Kevin Love is still just so valuable because defenses just respect him in a way they don't respect anyone else on the team, right? Like teams will chase him out to the three-point line. They will like worry about him getting the ball in the post and swinging it out. Like, all that stuff matters. And like, you know, I think if I'm Kevin Love, like I'm loving playing next to Jared Allen more than I am playing with like Drummond or anyone else he's played with. Right. Like it's, yeah. It's kind of the optimal just like guy for him because, you know, Allen's going to do all the defensive grunt work and he's going to block shots and cover you up on that end, but he's also going to kind of like fit with you sort of in a clean way. Like, and I think it all sort of, it looked like it, like there was something there. I keep having to remind myself with not just the Cavs, but like every team this season that like, the season's just bizarre. It is a sprint. It is like there's already very little practice time in the NBA. There's even less than normal. You don't get time to like really do anything like aside from like recovery and like rehab and like maybe some like shooting work, but like you're not getting the kind travel. Of stuff. Yeah, you're like getting on a plane and then you like you play in Charlotte, you go back and it's like, okay, you get like what, 2 days off before like one of the biggest games you're gonna play if you want to make a real run at this play-in tournament. So it's tricky. But it's if I'm Jimmy Bickerstaff, that even though you lose that game, and I think you look at that starting lineup and you probably feel like, okay, like I got to do something that I sort of wanted to see for months now. And that probably just feels very calming if I'm them. It certainly just like felt right, you know. It felt like this was the plan instead of like the random things we've seen a lot of the season.
Even like when they tweeted the starting lineup, it was like, oh, it's the five of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just such a nice feeling. Evan, were you a little surprised to see Kevin Love playing on the second night of a back-to-back? Because to me, like, I guess it's okay because, or I don't know whether or not any decision they make is okay or not, because I'm not a doctor. But I have to imagine the fact that he is on kind of a minutes limit and he's not overexerting himself in any one game probably helped make it a little more easier for them to go back to him. But I guess it also kind of at the same time speaks to kind of Love's willingness to be out there that, hey, I've missed so much of this season that could have been a lot of fun, could have been a lot different if I was in the equation, and he just wants to be out there.
Yeah. I think it is a big part of that. I think there is a little bit of like rooted frustration, the fact that he didn't play for the majority of the first half of the season, and just getting out there in the second half is key, especially with, let's be realistic here, Kevin Love will probably be here next year and he'll be here beyond that as well. Like, you want to get him integrated. You want to get him associated, especially with Isaac Okoro and Jared Allen, the newer faces in this young core. Like, he has familiarity with Darius and Colin, especially Colin, because that's the out of the young core, the guy Kevin's played at the longest. But am I a little surprised? Not really, because I guess if you want to look at it this way, Kevin played in the back-to-back against Detroit and Philly, and unfortunately that's when he got hurt last time around. But I think, like you said, the Cavs keeping him on that minutes restriction, which is about 20 minutes or so, depending on the necessity of maybe needing him, they can go a little bit above that, or if it, you know, God willing, is a blowout, they can let him play a little bit less than that. But the Cavs are going to stick to it. They're a very cautious team when it comes to their players. They take a lot of care making sure their players are healthy and they have longevity, and they're going to stick to that. And he played about, I think, 22-ish minutes last night, and you could tell maybe it's a little bit of – he's a little gassed as well after playing with Charlotte the night before. And
looked
statistically
stiff.
Yeah, he looked a little stiff. Statistically, I mean, that's just part of getting back into the swing of things. But when you're talking about, like, just surprising in the starting lineup, like, imagine how excited Jared Allen is to play against a spacer like Kevin Love, and then also have the spacing that Darius and Colin also provide. And I know Isaac isn't the best three-point shooter, but he has a little bit of range as well. Like, Jared Allen's going to be feasting when he's playing with this starting core, because it just makes so much sense on paper when you pair him with the rest of these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lineup that makes sense on paper, right? But We've seen things that make sense on paper not necessarily work out with this team as well, right? So I think that's why there was so much kind of excitement to see this lineup all come together. And when you look at it, like, the big part of why they lost was the veterans just didn't play that great. Like, I thought Garland had a bad game. Like, you look at that stat line and it's still...
I don't know why, but I like the way you said that. I think he had a bad game.
It's funny. He hesitated the same way on Locked On Cavs about it too. He's just like,
this
Darius
guy loves Darius.
I really don't much.
Like, I mean, like, he did a quick game. Scan of the room to make sure Darius wasn't in there like listening. Just didn't want to let him down.
Okay, Darius probably tell you had a bad game.
I like that the sliding scale of what we expect with Garland has moved to this point where 20 points, 7 assists, 1 turnover is considered a bad game for him, and it is a testament to how well he's been playing, especially after the All-Star break. But like when you look up and down the lineup, like it was good production out of Garland, Sexton, Allen. Okoro didn't have the best offensive game, but I thought he had a strong game overall. I
thought he was really good on Steph, even though Steph got his.
Exactly. Like he made him work, and a lot of kind of the like that crushing stretch from Steph where he hit those back-to-back threes was immediately after Okoro checked out of the game. And even when Steph was getting some open shots, that was something that Steph had to work off ball to generate those looks. And when you're expending more energy, you're going to miss shots, even when you are a shooter that's as good as Steph. But it didn't really surprise me to see Kevin Love not play as well on the second night of a back-to-back. The one thing that did stand out, and I saw a few people mention this, not only did we get the debut of the starting five, we also got our first real look at what everyone kind of anticipated to be the bench trio of Delly, Sexton, and Nance. And it's very clear right now that Larry is not himself. He just doesn't look to have the same pop and the decisiveness that he had before he got sick. And that's to be expected. But that lineup did not work out well at all. They were outscored by 12 in their 9 minutes together. Negative 66.7 net rating in those minutes.
That sounds about right from the eye test. Yeah, now, I mean...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and I do want to kind of back up and kind of do corroborate that, you know, Larry does not look like himself at all. He, in his two games back, I mean, looks like... You know, he looks like someone who's sick still, or, you know, still catching their conditioning. I mean, it looks like he's processing slow and moving slow, which is kind of the thing that people don't talk about when you're not in shape yet, is that your mind is slow too. You know, and I'm not worried about it at all, but it is a noticeable drop off. So to that end, like, I don't know if you were getting, I didn't know where you were going before I cut you off, but you know, like I don't feel like I want to draw too many opinions of the Larry bench units just yet, though I do think something interesting is that Hartenstein was not in the rotation in this one.
Yeah, that was actually going to be the question that I had is, one, do you guys both agree that that is something that they should be trying to do? Because I think that's something Carter and I have called for, but I can't really recall if you guys have talked about what that bench unit can be. And did you agree with kind of the pairings that they had around there? If you don't like it, is there ways that you can improve that lineup or that trio to make them a little more effective?
I kind of think you're just going to have to like figure it out as you go. Like, I just think that's sort of where this is at, right? Like, I think like depending on who you're playing, like you might see Hartenstein play against a team that has like more traditional bigs. Like if there's a team, like if there's a night where you play, maybe like you want to throw him against Vooch for a couple minutes, just to bruise up Vooch on Saturday or something, right? Like you might do something like that. I think like against Golden State, where like you're going to see some Draymond at the five and they're playing like Juan Castano Anderson, like you're not gonna.
That guy can play, by the way. I like
that guy's good. It's a really cool story. And you know, I'm sure Justin like secretly was like holding his Wiggins Cavs jersey last night and just kind of vibing.
That guy, I tweeted this. That guy needs to get over it, man. You got to stop playing so well against the
guys.
Cavs.
Do it's, so much to not go see a therapist. You know,
it has just really been, go through a it lot. It has been far too long, man. It's been 7 years, Andrew Wiggins. You need to gear down just a little bit because you look like a superstar every time you play the Cavs, and I'm just not here for it.
Glenn Taylor somewhere is like pumping his fist, you know, really tried hard, Andrew. But no, like, I think you're just going to have to figure this out as you go. And like, you know, like if Larry, Larry probably had a very strong say in his willingness to play, and they wouldn't have put him out there if like, it wasn't like physically a thing, but like, you know, maybe like you sit him on back to back as you're kind of getting him back into shape. Cause like losing 20 pounds is as was reported, and like your conditioning is never going to come back cleanly. And again, like this is a season where like you're probably having to rely on games more than ever to get back in shape. It's not like Larry is going to be able to get some 5-on-5 in like when the rest of the team played the night before, right? Like there's just a lot of difficulties with this. I will say, I want to see going forward if JB will start throwing in some of the young guys, like, does, you know, now that Lamar is on that longer term contract, like does he get like a random stretch? Like, does Jetty get a couple games where he gets to maybe reprove himself again? Do we see Broderick Thomas get like a couple games where he plays 10, 12 minutes? Like what does this mean for Dylan Windler when he comes back? JB is going to have options, and it could be matchup dependent. It could just be like who's impressing him in practices that we don't see, right? Like, there's a lot that I think is just going to be on the fly, and what works will just kind of work.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this a little bit on Locked On Cavs, and we kind of figured out that Larry, after especially Larry tweeted back soon, we assumed Jarrett was going to be into the fold as well. Like, what does JB do? Because Dean Wade and Hartenstein both played really well when both Larry and Jarrett were sidelined, and it just made it tough. And we both agree that Isaiah may be a bit more of a situational matchup. And I know they're not going to play Philly again this year, but like Philly was the example that first came to my mind because they have a Joel Embiid, they have a Dwight Howard. You might need an extra body just to kind of slow that bench unit and especially Joel Embiid down. But Vooch is a good example for Chicago coming up soon. Like maybe he sees more Hartenstein minutes, but like Chris said, I think it's going to be a situational on a night to night basis where you kind of see, does Dean Wade get the minutes? Does Lamar Stevens now with that guaranteed contract get more minutes? Does Hartenstein get more minutes? But I think Dean Wade's just kind of be the front runner here because he takes and he makes three pointers, and that's, he takes a lot of them actually. Like I think he was averaging, he took 10 actually the other night for the Cavs. And I mean, that's a lot, but you got to take them somewhere. And in theory, Dean Wade provides a little bit more of a complete package offensively because the Cavs do have some defensive specialists, I guess, if you want to call them that, that come off the bench as well. So kind of mix it up a little bit, provide some spacing for that bench unit, especially if you want Sexton to operate. So I don't know. You lean with Dean Wade, but like Chris said, you look at Jetty, you look at Roderick Thomas, you look at Lamar Stevens, you look at all these guys, because like Kobe said, this is an evaluation period for the Cavs too. And why not evaluate every bench piece you have whenever it's just based on the night-to-night matchup?
Yeah, and I said this, I think, before these two games, but, you know, we were talking, and I said, you know, I'm sure Kobe would love, Kobe and JB would love a guard or a wing to come in and play so well down the stretch that he has to choose between Hartenstein and Wade to fill the rotation. I think in the interim, I didn't see as much Dean Wade at the three as I thought we were going to see just to find minutes for Hartenstein, but, you know, it's kind of a rock and a hard place situation. I don't really know what to do about it other than kind of what Chris said, which is let the hot hand roll. Like if it's working, keep them in. If it's not, take them out. And I know that's kind of a simplistic way to do it, but in a season where you don't get to make well-grounded decisions every single time, you kind of have to roll the dice when you're trying to win.
Yeah, I agree. And the only exception to that, I think, is kind of those three that should be staples with that bench unit, which is Delly, Sexton, and Nats. Like, you would anticipate that Delly and Nats's presence is going to make things easier for Colin, that he can replicate a lot of those looks that he gets with Garland, only being a little more assertive. Now, I thought he could have maybe got a few more touches there. He wasn't as active working off the ball. And some of that might just be that there just hasn't been a lot of time playing with Delly. Like they're still under 100 minutes together, 67 minutes together on the season. Delly doesn't necessarily have that same ability to beat his defender off the dribble, but he does have a really good passing ability for someone that isn't really an offensive threat. But it did seem like the Warriors have an understanding of what Delly brings to the table. They're not the biggest fans of Delly, and you could tell that they were really playing off of him. And when Larry isn't feeling like himself and he's not able to be assertive, that really does make things difficult. And you saw the offense bogged down. But I think, like, from a theoretical standpoint, I agree with the points you guys made of Hartenstein and Wade is probably going to be a little bit matchup dependent. But in theory, like, when you think about it, Sexton, Delly, Prince, Larry and Hartenstein, like that is a lot of passing that you can have, especially from those two bigs. I feel like you can get a lot of dynamic looks. And for the people that want Sexton to be the sixth man, this is what it looks like. Like these are those minutes. He's already playing with the bench unit. So that's just, I'm sprinkling in one of my gripes. I'm not going to point any fingers at Evan or anything like that.
not that you would ever do that.
I'm not one to do that. I really am, I'm not. But like that, it's just one of those complaints that drives me nuts. And I saw it come up again yesterday. And like it's one thing to bring that point up from like kind of a matchup standpoint, or that's how you want to do your rotations or whatever. But it just seems to ignore the reality of Sexton's already playing those bench minutes, and they're hoping that he can elevate those lineups. And like I just think the starters at least have experience of a lot of different pieces shuffling in and out of the lineup. The bench unit really has had less continuity than anywhere else on the team this season. So it's not really a surprise to me that you don't see the consistency you'd want from that second unit just yet.
Well, and I think I would add to that, like, you're still trying to raise the talent level of the team overall. Like, you're still figuring out who is, like, an actual thing here, right? Like, you know, Dylan Windler's obviously hurt, but, like, he's been a little up and down. Jetty has vacillated between, like, being, like, looking sort of like the Jetty you would hope you're getting, and Jetty who's just, like, playing kind of his own game kind of on the court. Like, you've had all the injuries. And I think you're just at a point, too, where, like, I might be seeing this more just because this is just what my brain, like, it could be, like, a bias thing where, like, my brain is just so geared to this that I'm missing other stuff. But, like, I just think Kevin Love is still, like, the one guy on the team that defenses still are, like, kind of more selling out for than anyone else. Like, Colin, they still go under a lot of screens with him. Like, Darius, they're like, okay, if you want to take that long three, even though you're taking more of them and hitting them at a good clip, like, take them. Larry, like, we know you don't exactly, like, want to pump these threes up. Like, shoot it. Like, go ahead. Like, Jarrett, like, okay, you want to take that little 16-footer at the free throw line? That's fine. Do what you want to do. Like, they're not – like, Isaac Okoro, some teams treat him like he doesn't exist, even though he will punish them on closeouts and on sloppy rotations. Like, there's still just, like, a talent level that you're trying to get the respect of the defense that will then open up other stuff. And there's ways you could counteract that, certainly. But, like, there's just a lot of – like, Ndeli, like, for all the good that he provides, like, you're Justin Dre, like, the teams are just like, okay – Matthew Dellavedova gets the ball, we will let him take a three-pointer. That is fine. That is absolutely fine. And that's just where you're at. And until you kind of figure that out, or guys kind of garner some more respect or whatever it is, like, that's just the reality of these lineups. And, like, there's only so, like, bench heavy lineups just historically, like, there's very few things that where those are just cleanly productive, right? Like, one of the staples of the last LeBron years was, like, that he would drag those out. But, like, Kyrie was amazing, and his bench lineups were not good. Like, that's just – that can happen sometimes. And you just got to, like,
turns out when you're playing as you go. When you're playing your 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th men, you don't tend to outscore the opponent. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, and when these guys have never played together, and, like, they're – some of them are relatively new and, like, weren't with the team, like, when they were in the bubble workouts or whatever, like, this is hard. The NBA, folks, is quite hard, actually. Breaking news.
I would agree with that. Evan, you look like you were ready to jump in there.
No, Evan's got his infinity gauntlet just here to snap on us.
Yeah. No, I'm just stunned by Chris's development that the NBA is difficult. It's just
I'm very smart.
Hard-hitting. Yeah. That's the hard-hitting stuff you
get. Hard-hitting.
It's that Scripps education just, you know, really just getting me here for those strong.
Where'd you go to college again?
Ohio University. I got my Athens block right there.
It's a great school. You should check out their alumni spotlights.
Moving on, because I don't think we're going to get into post-secondary education in the U.S.
Want to talk about Jason Carter coming back to OU? I'm Carter. I'm in. Let's go.
I think the Cavs would change their mind about whether they wanted to keep us.
I would too. I would.
And I would just be sitting here giving polite laughter the whole time because I'm Canadian and that's what I do. I could not be more excited. So we're recording this. I guess it'll be dropping Saturday morning, but we're recording this on Friday night, and the Cavs are entering what I consider to be probably the most significant stretch of games that they've had. Like, the play-in tournament, in my opinion, is going to be difficult. Yes, the schedule gets easier here, but they're playing teams that almost exclusively are trying for the play-in. Like, you play Chicago twice. Yes, it's without Zach LaVine, but you're on the road for the first of those matchups, and you're on the road for a lot of this week. You play Charlotte, you play Washington, you play Toronto, you play Washington again. Like, all of these teams really want to get into there. And my big question, and Evan, I'll start with you, is how meaningful do you think the results are going to be down the stretch, whether it be individual stats or team stats? Because I know there's a bit of a sentiment that this post All-Star stretch is where teams don't take a team like the Cavs as seriously. So you can't read into the numbers. We had that last year with Colin Sexton, and even the year before where he had to prove it the following season. Do you put a lot of stock into the stretch for the Cavs?
I do. And we talked about this last night on Locked On Cavs. You put it best when you said that this game against Chicago and then the following game on Wednesday against Chicago are probably two of the biggest games the Cavs have played since 2018 when LeBron dragged the team back to the finals. And because the play-in tournament is a really real thing for them, they're 2.5 back in Chicago. They play Memphis tonight as we're recording on Friday. And depending on the results, they could be 3 games or 2 games back. And then the Cavs could really close the gap between them and Chicago and be nipping at their heels. And we talked about this too, like the most consistent thing for the Cavs, other than just injuries just really sucking the life out of them at times, is they've consistently said, we want to be a playoff team. We want to be a team that's in the conversation at the end of this. And it's endearing at times because this Cavs team has no quit, especially from these young players. And like you said, yeah, maybe some teams won't take the Cavs seriously. Maybe some of those teams will be down in that May stretch where the schedule gets a little tougher again. But I think teams are going to have to take Cleveland seriously because they aren't going to quit. And especially Chicago. Like Chicago, if they want to make the playoffs and after all the moves they made, they don't make the play-in tournament, that's hugely disappointing.
That's not great. And they still have a lot of talent. Like they still have a lot of guys that you need to worry about.
So they better take Cleveland seriously Saturday and Wednesday. And I mean, Detroit's no cupcake for Cleveland. So Cleveland's got to take Detroit seriously on Monday as well. And I don't know. I think the Cavs are going to take all these games seriously. And I think their opponents will as well. And I think it's statistically, I know like a lot of the guys, especially Colin, and I think a lot of these young guys would say the same thing. Like they don't really care about individual achievements. They want to be able to celebrate as a team. And I think they're going to try their damnedest to be competitive down the stretch. And that's a good thing for us as people who cover this team, because when you get into the doldrums at the end of the season, some teams do kind of pack it in a little bit. I don't think this Cavs team will, and it'll keep things interesting and a little bit feisty for us as we kind of wrap up the season.
And I know we and Justin, I think you made a smart point in that this is normally the danger zone of the NBA season, where teams play well, dumb people like us get tricked and go, oh, well, maybe they're actually good, and then they're not that good. You know, because teams have all but packed it in or are just, you know, trying to get to the playoffs. Playoff races are super tight. And because of this play-in tournament, we have 24 teams in legitimate contention to make the playoffs. So, you know, your quote-unquote off nights really only come against Orlando, Detroit, kind of Sacramento, but they're still trying. OKC, Houston, and Minnesota. Everyone else, every other matchup, the team is well incentivized to beat the Cavs. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, maybe they'll catch a couple lazy nights from, like, the very tippy top of each conference, but those games are hard to win anyway because they're against, you know, teams that are leading their conferences. Like, even a sleepwalking Sixers are pretty freaking dangerous. So, you know, I just don't think that...
They don't play the Sixers.
Well, you know what I mean, Jesus Christ. God, what a needless fact check.
Well, wasn't that helpful? That helpful, Carter?
It wasn't at all. You know, like, so I guess I just don't think that argument holds any weight. So I do think this matters. I do think it will be, it's indicative, and it doesn't hurt that the team actually is what it is, what it was supposed to be for the first time all season while it happens.
Yeah, no kidding. You know what I was reminded of today, just kind of thinking about this stretch? Do you guys remember year one of LeBron returning, where there was a game in Chicago and there was the quote going around post game that everyone made fun of Kyrie turning to LeBron and asking in the huddle, is this what playoffs are like?
Yeah, it was the first game back.
Yeah. Was it the first game back?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Anyways, I remember that moment. And like, to me, this is probably going to be the closest thing that these guys are going to experience the playoffs. Cause I, while I'm rooting for them to make the plan, I don't really foresee that happening. Like, I think they might be in play in position.
Chicago really has to blow it in a pretty serious way, in my opinion, because they, could you imagine, is that pick they gave up this year protected?
Top four.
I think it's top four.
Okay. Well, still, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like,
to give up a top 10 pick in this draft.
And even if Chicago blows it, like, I think Toronto's right there to take their spot. Washington's right there to take their spot. Like,
I keep seeing little things about like Toronto, like resting a bunch of guys. Like, there's like a little bit of like a, like,
oh,
a,
they're not trying, fellas. Don't get me. Let's not mince words here. They're trying.
They are resting guys because one, they got hurt. Two, they were playing Pascal Siakam crazy minutes. And three, part of the reason why teams were probably hesitant to give up not a James Harden because he didn't get anything, but like a Drew Holiday package for Kyle Lowry, is he's 5'11", 35, and always breaks down at the end of the season. So it doesn't necessarily, like, it doesn't surprise me to see him missing some time, but Van Vliet's back tonight. I think they're going to be right there in the mix.
I think they're so institutionally strong, even if they are, you know, happy to take some L's here and there. I don't think it actually much matters within the core of the roster, because, like, again, that's just an institutionally strong team. Cavs got to see it firsthand. They scored 87 points in a half.
Well, yeah. And there's like, unlike, and then like the LaVine thing with Chicago and him being out due to health and safety protocols is like such like a wrench for Chicago, because like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's very vague and we don't exactly know like when he's going to be back. But like when you see the word several games, that would indicate that maybe he's not going to play Saturday or Wednesday against the Cavs. Yeah. And like if the Cavs, I think, want to make a real run at this, you got to win at least one. And if you win two, that's even better. And then you get Washington, and those games from the first half of the season being postponed due to COVID becomes this even more important thing that they're now inserted back into the schedule here. Like it becomes this like crazy stretch where like if you rip off some of these wins right now, like this becomes a thing. Like there's no projection that really gives them like a significant chance, but like you win these couple games and it's like this is tight enough where it's a thing. And ultimately, like I think, like that's good for Colin Sexton. That is good for Darius Garland. That is good for JB Bickerstaff to go through this. Like obviously he coached Memphis, and you know he's been in higher leverage situations than some of the players. In terms of the NBA, but like him getting to go through like maybe some like more detailed prep and like saying like, hey, this is competitive, this is going to be tight, like we're going to go all out on this and try to compete, like that's a good thing for them to at least get something to like play for, because frankly like they've had some brutal stretches. Like I mean, we're not that far removed from really tough stretches for all of these guys.
I mean, I think it's incredibly important, because you look even at this game against the Warriors, like Garland stunk at the start of the game. He couldn't get anything to fall down. And then in that second quarter, it's like a kind of click that, okay, I can't just be passive Garland and set up other people and hope that they kind of carry the load. This team needs a bit of that burst, right? Like I need to shoot my way out of this. And there's going to be moments like that, whether it is chasing a playoff spot next year or in a playoff series, you're going to have nights where your option A is taken away from you, either through cold shooting or defensive matchup or whatever the case may be. And you have to figure out ways to win. And even if you fail in these games, even if you come up short, that failure is something that you can build upon. It's usable game film and stuff that you can look at in the summer when you're trying to develop. And to me, especially after losing out on this stretch last year and with the play-in tournament now being a thing, now being in the mix this late in the season, I just think it's such a valuable opportunity, because wherever the Cavs finish, like you would assume in the lottery odds, it's going to be probably 5 through 8 in that range. Even if they got the final play-in spot in the East, that's probably going to be where it is, unless they win both of those play-in games. If that's the case, like, unless you jump up and you get Cade, a lot of these guys are still going to be 19-year-olds that aren't going to help you win right away. They might help you in some games, but they're not going to elevate your floor next season. If you want to be a serious playoff team next year, that's going to have to come from internal growth. The guys that are already on this team are going to be the biggest part of that equation. So you need to focus on the player development and the things that are within your control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also don't really want to make losing the norm. Like I talked to Colin about this back in January, and he told me, he's like, I'm sick of losing. And so he's going to try and go out and win every single game. And I think that's just kind of the mentality of this team. And like I said, it's endearing. Like, they're not really going to lay down. And like you said, that's good development. That's just a good mentality for this team to have, is just say like, okay, well, we're not going to go out and intentionally lose. We're not going to shamelessly rest players and tank, because it's de-incentivized with the play-in tournament being a thing. And I guess my other point is, it may not happen again, but the last time the Cavs got the first pick was Andrew Wiggins, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to get the playoffs with a big three of Kyrie Irving, Luol Deng, and Spencer Hawes, and they finished pretty short of the eighth seed. I think when they lost to Phoenix, they were knocked out of the playoffs. I remember this because I was.
That's a generous use of big.
You know, they were in the mix late. I remember they were in the mix late, especially when Kyrie went down and Deion was keeping them in those games. I remember that.
Like the fact that season was like, hey, Spencer Hawes is running pick and roll with Kyrie, and Kyrie is like learning how to run a functional pick and roll. That was like the win. What a time, folks. We've come a long way.
That was my first trip to Cleveland, man. I came down,
and that was the get good year. That was the year where it was like, it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
That was Earl Clark can't inbound the ball season.
I still Jack, I thought was a smart signing on paper.
I don't get I don't get enough credit for the 2016 title because when I flew down,
I don't get enough credit for it.
Boy. And I want everyone to clear out, and I'm going to explain why. Because my first trip to Cleveland, the night before my trip was when Kyrie got his shoulder torn and he didn't play for the three games I was in Cleveland. Then the next year when I flew down to Cleveland, the game before my flight was when Kevin Love got his arm pulled out of his socket by Kelly Olynyk. Because that happened before both of my flights, I did not fly down in 2016. I did not attend a game in person. And for that reason, everyone's shoulders stayed where they're supposed to be. And I deserve credit for that.
Did you not fly down because you hurt your shoulder?
No. I want credit for that. I want credit for it, damn it.
Well, you're not going to get it. I don't... That's not how the world works.
Damn it. Oh, well. You know what? Speaking of not how the world works, Mark Cuban doesn't like the play-in now that the Mavericks are in seven. Do you think
funnily that enough, really he advocated for the play-in tournament, so life finds a way.
And it's funny because that's a team that you talk about, hey, maybe some of these teams aren't going to maybe they could be prone to take the Cavs a little less seriously down the stretch. Those back-to-back games against the Mavericks come late in the season. And like part of why I really love this play-in tournament, and I want to get both of your thoughts on whether or not the play-in's a good idea to begin with.
Glad to be here.
What's that?
You said, I want to get both of your thoughts.
Well, I know. I'll just
check out.
You just went on a rant last podcast about how much you like it. So I want to at least start with them and we can get a conversation going from there. That's how beautiful podcasting works. But like those are going to be games where they're going to be taking that serious because, and this is the beauty of the plan, these games still have meaning. They have more meaning than ever. And I just think that teams having 72 chances to avoid being that 7 or 8 seed and to get up into those top six. Like to me, that's really exciting. I love that there's so many teams in the mix and I love that it gives those bottom teams in the playoffs something to play for. Whereas normally you might just say, okay, well, we're 7, 8, whatever. Like we're probably not going to win either way. But now there's real risk of falling out of the playoffs. Evan, what are kind of your thoughts of the play-in tournament?
I think it's a great idea. I know the lottery flattened odds kind of stink for teams that just maybe, I don't know, if you're a team who didn't make the playoffs, whether it was like the Lakers, the Grizzlies with the Zion draft, or just kind of everything else just kind of getting weird in between there as well. And the Pelicans, especially jumping up for Zion too. But I think it's just a good idea for those teams. Like you said, yeah, like Carter said, there's the bottom feeders. Like you have the Minnesotas, the Houstons, the Detroits, the Oklahoma Cities of the world. Like those are teams who are not trying to make this situation happen. But you have 24, 26 other teams who are actively trying. Like Sacramento's still in there, like you said, but they could not be very well soon. But it gives a reason for these teams to kind of have something to play for. And like you said, maybe like the Cavs chances are slim. I think the Ringer gives them a 3% chance last time I checked to make the play-in tournament.
To make the play-in?
Yes.
That's, so, I guess it's not that crazy. I mean, because I'm sure the Ringer's models project they are going to keep losing at the rate. Well,
that's also the model that's like, hey, Dylan Windler's the Cavs' best young player. No shade to Dylan Windler, but like...
That Ringer model also said the Hawks are going to finish the third best record in the East. So it's an interesting model for sure, but
they're not far off it.
but at the same time, it just makes this basketball meaningful. And like I said, you're going to have teams who are trying to make this happen. Cause it just makes it interesting. Cause I mean, let's say you do make the play-in tournament and you don't make the playoffs, you're still in the draft lottery. It's not like the absolute end of the world here. And like you said, Justin, especially in the Cavs case, let's say they sneak into that 10 seed, they'll still be in that 5 to 8 range. So they'll hopefully get a top 5 or top 10 pick out of it. So why not try and be active? Why not try and be competitive? And it also, I think, maybe helps these teams that have been kind of rotational losers for the last few years. It makes them competitive, makes them interesting, and also kind of breaks the chain of that, you know, culture of losing too. Like you don't want that stink in the organization. You want to get it out as soon as you can. And yeah, I don't know, trying to play for something meaningful is a good way to make that happen.
I have basketball karma.
Yeah, no, and I think like I understand that like we live in a sports world where it's like you're either like winning or like nothing else matters. I kind of think like sometimes like middle ground can be kind of fun. It can be a good place to be. Like maybe you don't want to stick there forever. You certainly, I think, as a fan base wants to like a chance to get better. But like I think when you actually just are giving more teams and more fan bases something to like be invested in, like that's a good thing. And like I also just think for like the players, I'll be curious to see how it sort of, if like we get, maybe some guys will get more candid about it at some point. Cause I don't think I've ever seen like a really great quote from a player that's in terms of like what they think about the play-in tournament. And I'll be curious to see what it looks like if the, assuming like they keep it going forward in like a more in a non bubble, non COVID season where like it's sort of like a part of like the longer view of things. I want to see if that adds any wrinkles to this, but like I'm for it because I think it does give teams more to play for. And I think like when you're a player on any of these teams that's not one of the best teams in the league, you like, even though you sort of know that your team is maybe going to draft high or whatever, you do not really care about like the next 19-year-old your team is going to draft. Your no. coach is like, I want to win. I want something to put on my resume because I don't want to lose my job. Like that is just sort of like one of the things here. And like you want a shot. Like all you really can ask for is a shot. And like, you know what, like if you're in the East in particular, it's not like the bottom of the East is like great. You know what I mean? Like there's a gulf in terms of the win-loss record there, but like, it's not like this is the West where it's like, it could be a little more challenging depending on who gets that 10 seed. In the East, it's like, you know what, like maybe you're still going to get slaughtered by Philly in round one or whatever, but like if you can at least, you got a chance to make something uncomfortable and you're guys some reps.
And honestly, how fun would it be to take a game off? Like that game would be so exciting, you know, which like, I'm sure if you're a fan of a team that's firmly in the playoff picture, or even a Cavs fan who maybe hasn't paid as much attention since their stretch of finals runs, but if you're a day in day out Cavs fan, I think going to Philly and taking a game off of Embiid and Simmons and like the young kids playing well, like that is like enough to sustain me for half a season.
Well, and,
you know?
And that's also just, it's good for these guys to go through that. Like the only, unless you're getting like another generational guy who's just going to take you from where you are all the way to the top, like take you to the moon. Like what you need to do is slowly build up some equity, slowly build up the culture and like instill some stuff. And like, it would be so good for Colin Sexton and Darius Garland as young guards who are running an offense to like go through the process of working with the coaches, to go through the game plan, to go through game by game adjustments, even if it's like a 2-game slate where they get to the play-in tournament, they take game one and then they're like, okay, here's what we think team X is going to do for game two in terms of their counters and adjustments or their coverage. Going through that would be so useful for them. Even if, again, you could still get in the lottery and like, it's still a bunch of ping pong balls that you could get you. You could still end up getting a high pick because of the way the lottery ads work, like it could still just, it's not likely, but you're not really incentivized to tank.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would just be good for them to like go through the process of that before like at this point, and like they're still very young. Like Colin Sexton's in year three, Darius Garland's in year two. They've had weird starts to their careers for reasons that are not in their control in a lot of ways, right? Like I think going through something that is meaningful and stressful and structured like that would be really, really good for them, frankly.
Can I ask an unpopular question that Justin's going to hate, but we have to ask the question. Do we want the Cavs to make the playoffs? Not the play-in, the playoffs.
Is our silence definitely enough?
Yeah, I'm not going to go first because I can't go first here.
I think like if your terms of like what you want is like the best way for the team to sort of like build, the answer is no. But would it be fun to like not make the playoffs without a certain guy from Akron for the first time in like 20 something years? That would be fun.
This is kind of where I'm at is I don't think that if you look at this in the most logical way, in terms of team building and the best chance for team building, that, you know, winning 2 play-in games and making the playoffs appreciably helps your team more than a top 10 pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if you gave me truth serum, I would tell you that my dream scenario is make the play-in, win a game, and then go home, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, like, the Cavs team-building side of me, that's where I'm at. But my Cavs fan side of me does not care about any of that. And if they win a game, if they beat Miami in the first game and they get a chance to go to send, you know, on Miami home, if that is indeed who stays in the 7th spot, oh man, I will lose my mind. I will have so much fun. So like, I don't know what that means because like, I'm clearly split here, right down the middle. I don't know what I want.
How dope would it be for them to get to go play a play-in tournament game in MSG?
Oh God.
Uh, God, that would be fun. But the idea of sending Pat Riley's team home has overwhelmed everything for me.
Evan, I'm still doing some stretches here before I jump onto my soapbox. Do you want to go?
Carter kind of has the same mentality I do. Like the fan of me would say, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun, especially if you got the knockout Miami, or if Boston somehow keeps sliding a little bit, if that happens delicious. To Boston, or if it's New York, that'd be fun too. I don't know. It's the small market mentality, Napoleon complex in me that's coming out a little bit here. But in terms of team building, you go in, it's good for team development to go in. You play a high stakes game like that, it's good for the young guards. It's really good for just the team in general. And like Chris said, it's a good resume builder too for GB Bickerstaff, but nothing to worry about him there. But it's just to say, like, he took this team who, let's be honest, like during the first half of the season, this Cavs team looked bad. And then to say that they're
and
in
before,
this conversation.
And to be clear, before the season, we're projected not to,
yeah.
to finish like 29th.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's testament to JB's coaching ability as well, and just getting this team to buy in and just stick with him even when things are at the rockiest. But I agree with Carter's team building aspect too. Like, just win a game and go home. You're still in the draft lottery. That's okay. But it would be fun to spoil like a Miami or a New York or even Boston season. Like, that'd just be.
God, can you imagine how sad Knicks fans will be
if they get
the playoffs finally?
And then they fall out in the play-in tournament. That, you know, that's bound to happen. Especially with the injuries they have. I'd hate to see it happen to my large adult son, RJ Barrett. But
Justin's like very conflicted in the point. It would be worth it for the network, like 30-minute just like reaction video on all caps alone.
Man, it would be great. To answer the question, and nobody's going to be surprised at my answer. Yeah, I want to see this team make the playoffs. I think we have shifted a little too far into the GM mentality. Like, I think a lot of fans, especially on Twitter, I don't think this is necessarily true for fans at large, but I think a lot of people find the team building process fascinating, which I do personally. But when it comes to watching games, I go straight into fan mode. And it would be one thing if the Cavs at the start of the season got so many wins because of Kevin Love and Andre Drummond, and they backed their way into the playoffs. It's another thing for this team to have started off hot with Drummond being a big part of that, go through adversity, and then the young guys find a way to kind of pull themselves up and really elevate this team down the stretch. Like, Garland is playing like the star level prospect that some people projected him to be. Yeah, it makes things a little more difficult from a team building standpoint. If you put a gun to my head, I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs. That's just my personal opinion. But I still think that should be the goal. And
to be clear, I think within their locker room, it should certainly be the goal.
Oh, 100%.
What the best outcome is for the team. Yeah, that is the more interesting discussion to make.
And a high pick is probably the easiest way to add talent in the NBA. Like, we know that, but it's not the only way. And I touched on this a little bit on Locked On Cavs yesterday talking with Evan, but this team probably has a plan in place for if they jump up in the lottery, if they're in the middle of the, like if they pick eighth, they probably have a plan in place for if they make the playoffs and they don't get a lotto pick and have to pick later in the draft. Like, if I was sitting here 12 months ago and I said they can turn the Bucks pick and Dante Exum into Jared Allen, you'd say I'm crazy. If I cited Colin Sexton's stat line for this season, what he's averaging this season, 16 months ago, you'd say I'm crazy. Like, he's putting up basically an all-star season. We tend to talk in absolutes, and it for sure, it would be more difficult to build a contender without a high pick. But it's not the only way to get there. The opportunities come up when you don't expect it. Even the trade for Andre Drummond, I don't think people would have expected they could get him for that value. So to me, I root for what's in my control, and I let people that actually have to make the tough decisions, that have to make team building choices and improve the roster if they do make the playoffs, I let them worry about that, because that ultimately, it's not going to help me. It's just going to put more gray hairs in my head, and I'm not even 30 yet, and I have far too many.
Well, let me ask you guys, let me ask you this as a hypothetical. So let's just say you get to pick between sort of two types of fandom, like one where like your team is sort of struggling to find a grip and succeed in certain circumstances, sort of like the Cavs have at times, right? Or you could be something more akin to like the Pacers, or let's say like maybe the Raptors or the Heat or something like that, where it's like, yes, there's going to be ups and downs. Yes, you're still going to get to do some of the GM and like the roster building stuff and whatever, but your team is more consistently competitive and you're going to like have things that like, even if maybe you don't have like real title hopes every year, you get to be invested in something that is sort of like competent every single year. And again, like, you maybe coaches go come and go, players come and go. Would that be a more enjoyable fan experience? Because sometimes
men
I think
lie,
like that's okay.
My buckets don't. I said on one of our more recent pods that I would be okay being the pay. I would love to be the Pacers, you know?
Yeah. Like, there's something for that, and that's really hard to do. Like, yeah. I think it's like, it's underratedly difficult to like go through as many, like they've had Carlisle, Larry Bird coached, like McMillan coached, Dave Bjorker, and like, and they're not a market. They're bringing in destination stuff. They traded Paul George for a deal that no one thought was good, and then like Sabonis is not like their best player. Like, funny how that works sometimes. I think that would be a really interesting way to like try to exist in that way. It's really hard, but like that's not a team that has ever had like been able to draft like the top guy in a draft. Like, I couldn't even tell you what their highest pick was, and it's like maybe it was like Jonathan Bender at 5, like an 04 or something like that.
Yeah, top 10 picks matter for them now, and the same like Denver. I think the highest was Jamal Murray at like 8. Like, it's,
they drafted Nikola Jokic second in a draft where they drafted Yusuf Nurkic in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah. They drafted him in the second round. He was about to be the first player to win a MVP.
Yeah. He was like the 15th second round pick.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, I get that it's tougher, and the higher you pick, the more options you have. But like, there's so much talent coming into the league. And like, even Portland, yeah, they hit a ceiling, but if they would have offered, if they didn't give up multiple first round picks for Robert Covington, and they could have offered McCollum and like a bunch of picks for James Harden, yeah, like they may be a contender. Like, there were opportunities for Portland to become a contender. Utah capitalized on their opportunity and traded for Mike Conley. Like, opportunities come up down the road. And if you establish like a baseline competence, and if you become a stable organization that's consistently winning, that's trying tweaks, taking swings at guys to try to raise your ceiling, you're going to become a more attractive destination on the trade market, on the free agency market, on the buyout market. Like, all that stuff really matters. So for me, that's what I care about, because championships are great, but like, I want to be entertained for 82 games a season. And that to me should be the first goal, and then figure out how to raise the ceiling from there.
Justin, I know you said you wanted to be entertained, and we're probably getting close to the end of the podcast. So I kind of wanted to take a chance to bring a smile to the four of us on this pod with a little tweet that ran across my timeline. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Danny Ainge is at it again. He signed Jabari Parker, and Dan Greenberg just tweeted, "More importantly, good to see Ainge is back to moving in silence. How many Jabari Parker to Boston rumors did you see in here?" Can you believe that the Jabari Parker free agent market was quiet?
Take that, doubters. And to do it, they waive Mo Wagner, I should say.
Oh man, you know, that is classic Danny Ainge. Just
the,
you know,
the pick that people on,
the pick, operating in the shadows.
Remember when people were really upset that we gave up the Mo Wagner pick to get Larry Nance Jr.? Now we can go get him. He's waived. We can go get that stretch big that we wanted before we draft his brother, which Chris
took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, there you go.
They can get familiar with Mo and then get to know Franz soon after.
I love it. And you know what? I love hanging out with you guys and getting more familiar with you. Every time we hang out, it always brings a smile to my face. If you guys enjoyed the podcast, make sure you are subscribing to Locked On Cavs. Leave them a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, because that's the best way to support the podcast that you care about. If you're watching live on YouTube right now, make sure you like and subscribe. Help us show up higher in those algorithms and support the podcast. If you're listening on podcast, by leaving that rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of you leaving a review anywhere you want to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And we'd be more than happy to send you an invite. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.